Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. Recovering, you can hear a little hoarseness from emceeing and presenting at my hour, 3-day conference on empathic therapy in Syracuse, New York. It was an incredible success, and two of my guests were there. I hope they'll confirm that when we get to chat in about 1 or 2 minutes. The evaluations for it were better than any I've ever seen for myself as a teacher or as giving a single speech with evaluations or for a conference. Of the dozens of evaluations which were done on each day, by the way, we had about 170 people, but for the evaluations, except for four, they were straight 1 out of 5s, just right down, straight 1 out of 5s, and all of them were positive. Every single one was positive. Of the four that weren't straight ones, no one gave a 4 or 5. It was 2s and 3s. One was by a dear friend of mine. Actually, two were by dear friends of mine who were psychiatrists who gave some 2s because they wanted a higher level of presentation. These are two real friends of mine, psychiatrists, who gave us a few 2s for that. And then there were two other folks who felt that this should be more about psychopharmacology and the other side, the other viewpoint. Pharmacology and holistic approaches, which we're not about. We're about empathy. I've never seen a conference in which everybody gave good opinions. Nobody gave 4s or 5s, and just about every single person gave 1s. I think it's a tribute to the work we're doing, yes. I also think it's changing times. People are really deciding that they can take a stand on these issues and say the answer is one or another caring approach rather than drugs. Whereas in the past, there was much more angst about my not wanting people diagnosed. There was much more angst about my, and by all of us, you know, at the conference, not promoting diagnoses or drugs. So it was a great thing. Ginger wants to take a year respite. We won't be having a conference next year in Syracuse, but we are going to be having relationships with other conferences. Depending on my guests feel, we could talk a little about that, but that might be premature. So it was a success beyond expectation. We thought with the economy and the fact we'd done it 3 years in a row, we'd have a significant falling off in attendance, which we did not. And we had the most positive evaluations I've just ever seen from the people at the conference. Now for my guests. I love my guests. I love them more than I usually love my guests. As you know, I often love my guests. I try to bring on people that I care a lot about, but sometimes they're people I hardly know on occasion. I know these folks well. Tim Evans and Jerry Carter. Tim and Jerry. Jerry is spelled G-E-R-I. Tim and Jerry, are you there? Yeah, you're there. Are you on separate lines or one line with a speaker? Separate lines? Okay, you there too then, Jerry? Jerry?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Tim and Jerry. They are from the Tampa Bay area. They are both PhD psychologists. They are both oriented around an Adlerian approach. And Adler, of course, believed in social interest and caring and relationship and believed that we had to to give to others and to society, and that health came from what we're calling empathy. They do a marriage work, and I might let them tell you a little bit more about them. I think Jerry also works with divorcing couples. They're in the phone book in the Tampa area, and they can also tell you additionally how to get in touch with them. They did a workshop at our conference on marriage and a relationship, and some of my most trusted friends happened to go to their workshop and thought it was really, really good. So, hi, guys. You want to say anything about the conference?
This is Dr.
Jerry.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hello, yes.
Hi.
Hi.
We're having a little connection problems. I think I heard interference, somebody saying something that wasn't us. Talk about the conference a little and your experience.
Okay, Peter, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I got so much out of the conference. The last few days of doing therapy here back in Tampa, I have been using tons of new ideas. I am so pumped up about everything that I learned. You won't believe this, but my very last client came in for a sexual reason. She doesn't have any, sense of wanting to be with her husband anymore. And after I got through talking with her, it turns out there had been some past sexual abuse. So, you know, my empathic therapy experience helped me deal with that. But also, she is on 100 milligrams of Zoloft. And I was able to talk very intelligently about Zoloft. There was so much said about it. And she got it from a family physician, and she agreed that she would go back to him and to talk to him about weaning off, you know, very slowly. And I was just very pleased. And if I had not been at your event, Peter, I would have not have handled that the same way. I just felt empowered, and it was just probably the best conference that I've been to in a long, long time.
That's wonderful.
Peter, I think you were mentioning about the feedback from the conference, and I think one of the things I liked so much about the conference was that it was not stuffy, and you had such across-the-board variety of participants that it appealed to everyone, both intellectually, emotionally, spiritually. And I think one of the things, it's almost like a byproduct of your conference because of the attitude. I mean, it's on empathic therapies, and a byproduct of empathic therapy, or byproduct of empathy, is you end up unintentionally creating a real sense of community about everybody at the conference. So I don't think I've been to a conference in a long time where you had a spirit of community with people, and I think that's because everybody's wanting to be empathic. I can't tell you the last time I went to a conference and I actually was taking notes and learning new ideas and couldn't get enough, because the information there was overwhelming in a positive sense. And it's I got to watch my enthusiasm, because it's sort of like you see the light and you want to run around and tell everybody. You have to be well informed. You have to get knowledge and information about what's going on. So it was really a very useful experience. And myself, like Jerry, the minute I got home, I started using the material. We had a phone call from somebody, and they were looking for an anger management group, and I just started speaking with them for a few minutes. We don't do anger management groups, but I happened to ask him if he was on any prescription medication. He started talking about the lithium and the other drug medications he were on, and it didn't sound like to me he needed an anger management group. He needed help with getting off the medication. And I just had a family in here today where their son in high school, the high school sort of promotes kids being put on Prozac, and they put him on Prozac, and for the last 2 years he's just gotten worse. So all the information we learned about doing withdrawal using a collaborative family approach. I wish you could have been here. We were implementing it 2 hours ago. And I think if I hadn't had that exposure to the group and to you, I wouldn't have been able to help this family. So I'm very appreciative of it. I just think it's a wonderful tool. I want to figure out how we can spread the word and get more people involved.
You know, I think probably not much more than 20% of the conference, maybe 30%, was specifically about the meds, would you say? I'm so glad that there was enough for you to get all of that. But of course,
you had such a unique combination because you had information about meds, but you also had testimonials, and then you had things that people could do in an active way. You had a lot of information about what the legal system's doing and the farm. It was just a well-rounded conference where you appeal to all, I guess, lack of a better word, you just kind of appeal to all the senses. You know, Howie was great with talking about parenting and teaching people how to interact with kids that are in a loving, kind way. I mean, there was just so many variations and varieties of how to be a better, or not, I don't like the word better, but how to function as a human being, to function and contribute as a human being. There's a large variety, lots of flavors.
Well, I'm delighted. And as I said, the evaluations, you know, usually you don't just get everybody, you know, giving you a 7 or 8 or 9, whatever the numbers were, a perfect, you know, 1 out of 5. With so few and no real negative ones. So, we're going to be reaching out to other groups to do conferences with them next year, and then in 2 years we'll see what we'll do. We want a year now to work on some of these larger types of communications, figuring out how to set up emails that will go to thousands of people, working on our newsletter, and working on my Simple Truth videos, doing some blogging, and, you know, just continue to work in that area. So I'm hoping there will be no slacking on my not doing a Syracuse conference next year.
Well, we're hoping in March, I guess, 2014, Jerry and I have been talking. We know we're going to do something that centers around empathic therapies and the work you're doing. We know we're doing that. We're just formulating the ideas and getting it put together.
Mm-hmm. And date for that conference?
It is, yes.
February 28th, 29th, and March 1st, 2014.
So say that again.
It's February 28th, 29th, and March 1st, 2014. And that's in Safety Harbor, Florida, just 15 minutes from Tampa International Airport. Beautiful town, right on the water, beautiful spa, beautiful rooms. It's a good conference.
And you're sure I'm going to be there, huh?
I hope you're there, Peter, and I will be there.
So I'm formally invited now in front of 3 million of my listeners, right? All right, folks, so you know now where I will be for one conference at least, presumably talking for more than 20 minutes, February 28th. It's a leap year, 29th.
Oh, maybe it's not a leap year. I'm sorry, Peter. I might have that wrong. But it's the last 2 days of February and the first day of March, 2014. I'm not looking at a calendar.
All right, I've got it here. It's there is no 20. So it's going to be the Friday, the Saturday, and the Sunday, or
no,
Thursday, Friday?
Thursday, Friday.
It's February 27th, right. February 28th, and March the 1st.
That's what it is.
Yep.
27th, 28th, and March the 1st. All right. You who are listening to my show, heard about it first. You'll be able to read about it in a few months by going to the Florida Adlerian conference site. Just plug in my experience, Florida Adlerian Conference. Do you have any better directions? And you will get this information.
Yeah, our website for the Florida Adlerian Society is www.adler, that's A-D-L-E-R, florida.org.
Okay. But I know you can just get there through Tim Evans, you can get there through Florida Adlerians Conference and any such thing. I've turned away. I hope it didn't sound on the air like I was disappearing. I turned away to make a note of my own book. So we are set then. So that's definitely a place where you can hear me speak, and I suspect it's going to be hopefully enough to make it worthwhile for folks who want to hear about empathic therapy. So that's good news, and, you know, we'll keep abreast on that. So as of now, my thoughts are to just have a conversation with two of my favorite people in the world and two of Ginger's favorites. Did you meet interesting people at the conference, by the way?
Oh, yes, I would say we definitely did. And there was, and I think I totally agree with my husband's assessment. Everyone there was so kind and so warm and, you know, so approachable. And so I think it's a place, you know, Peter, where, you know, anyone could have come, whether you were, you know, a mom at home raising children or if you had your, you know, MD in psychiatry. And be able to talk to amazing, intelligent people who have amazing programs, amazing books. I will tell you that Elizabeth Cooper-Reese, right? I had lunch with her, and her organization is Mother Bear.
Mother Bear,
right?
Yes.
And
Ginger,
you know,
and I
knew.
Ginger and I are very much involved with it. So what about, Mother Bear's a good idea, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, it's a fantastic idea. And her center to help people who are having mental problems, Cooper-Reese, was her presentation was unbelievable, what she has done. And there I just got to sit there and have lunch with her and get to know her as a person and understand her story. It really, Peter, I'm hoping that your conference will have mass appeal in the next few years. It's it really is so informative and comes from the heart. Really good conference.
And I think that was one of the few conferences where people were giving me their cards, and I actually wanted the cards, and I've kept the cards, and I'm contacting the people with the cards. And a lot of the folks that we saw at your conference, we were asking them if they would consider coming to Safety Harbor in March. So I don't know if we could just reproduce a little bit of what you had, Peter, in New York, I'd be really happy with it, because it was just really very creative and very informative, and I think everybody there felt welcomed.
That's great. That's just marvelous. Well, what else should we talk about? How about your work? Do you want to tell folks about the kind of work you do that was a part of your workshop?
Sure. You want to go, Jer?
Oh, yeah, I would be glad to start. Well, Tim and I have a marriage and family therapy practice in Tampa, Florida, in the Hyde Park area. And we see, we're busy therapists. We probably see 35 to 40 clients a week. And most of them are couples and families, but we do a lot of couple work, and we're lucky because Tim and I are a married couple, so we will actually do see couples together many times. And we try to save marriages, and our goal is to really create satisfying, happy, intimate marriages. So a lot goes into that, and one of the things that we talked a little bit about in our workshop, you know, was the role of intimacy and sex. I'm also a sex therapist, and so we deal with that pretty effectively in our office. And we just kind of talked about ways couples can connect, and really the whole goal of marital therapy is to increase the connection between couples. And sex is a small part of that. There's much, much more to it. But that's what we taught on.
And we sort of, when somebody comes in to see us, we're more interested in not giving them a diagnosis or figuring out what's wrong with them, it makes my job a little bit easier, because I think when people come in to see us, we're interested in how we can help make them happy. And our ideal of being happy is helping people improve their relationships with each other. We also do family therapy, where you can improve your relationship with your kids. And a lot of what we're doing is we believe that if you're connected to the important people in your life, you're going to feel happy. If you're disconnected from the important people in your life, you're going to be unhappy. And our job is then to teach people the choices to make to stay connected and the choices not to make to be disconnected. And a little bit what we did in our workshop in New York was give the idea that mental health is knowing what choices to make to stay connected, what choices not to make to be disconnected. And we do this with just about everybody that comes in. The first task is to teach people how not to disconnect, and we usually then have what we call the we go through what we call the deadly habits. But our approach at our office is that, you know, meaningful relations are central to the good life, and the choices we make will determine that quality. And we also believe that you have to take responsibility for ourselves. And you've got to do this without wanting to control other people. And when we make choices that move us towards people, we're going to be healthy and happy. And when we make choices that move away from people, we're going to be unhappy. And I want to add, we do this all without any use of psychiatric drugs. And we also do this without having to make diagnosis, because we're interested in hearing people's stories, and we're interested in getting to know them.
As a practical matter, because I think folks think of this often, do you take insurance like I do, and do you give a diagnosis for insurance purposes?
That's a great question. Yes, we do take insurance. We're on several different panels. The big ones for me are Cigna, Aetna, and Humana. And I'm on some smaller ones as well, local. But you do have to give a diagnosis many times. Sometimes you don't, but you do. And usually we let our clients choose the one that they want. And it's kind of funny. They give you a funny look, and you're just like, well, this might follow you. You know, this might follow you around. So usually people like anxiety, because you can pretty much justify anxiety if you're driving around on 275, which is the local highway through Tampa. That will cause anxiety right there. But, you know, I don't like the insurance so much because of that. It's kind of a necessary evil, but I think it's really helpful for people to come in and talk through their problems and make some changes in their life that produces a much happier result. So we do take insurance, but we also work with people on a cash basis. And, you know, our hourly fee, we will often work with people if it seems too expensive. We are pretty empathic, Peter, when it comes to understanding people. That, you know, everybody's in a different financial position, so we are pretty much across the board. We get paid differently from everyone.
And I might add, when we give people the choice of their diagnosis, the choices we give them, they'll fit that diagnosis, so we're not doing anything that's unethical or, you know, illegal. I think also what's unique about our office is we've got about five or six interns working here, and they're either in graduate school or they're getting their license, so they want to learn. And we really provide a sort of a full-service office, because we'll work with kids, we'll work with families. We do some unique things when people's marriages are in trouble. I think when people, you know, when you're married, we usually ask that, who you're married to, that's probably the most significant relationship in your life, or one of the most significant. And when that's going, whether it's going well or poorly, that's going to have a lot of impact on how you function throughout the day. You could have an argument with your wife and be thinking about it on your way to work and actually have a car accident because you're preoccupied with the fight. So we see these relationships, we take them very seriously. We think they have a big impact on your life. But we've also found that if people are struggling and they're getting really discouraged and they're feeling hopeless about it, the marriage, often like a 50-minute session isn't going to work, and we'll ask them because the divorce and the, in terms of finances and family relationships, because our view is marriage affects the entire community, what we'll do with some people is we'll actually take them out to Safety Harbor Resort and ask them to go spend 2 days there with us. And for 2 days, we'll see what we can do to work out the relationship. And this is when people are usually at crunch time and they're ready to give up, but they don't want to. And we're trying to do some things that are a little, they're not traditional, because I don't think with some of these marriages you're going to save it in 50 minutes. And we'll go over there and spend 2 days with them and work things out one way or the other. Hopefully they'll choose to stay married. But what's also unique about our office is if the decision is that one person's totally detached or they're totally incompatible, we have this thing where we call design your own divorce. And we'll actually talk to them about moving from an unhappy marriage to happy divorce. And the lawyers and the judges will tell you this. Divorce is 85% of it's emotional. Only 15% of it's litigation. And so, and a lot of times what the lawyers will do when they mediate, they haven't gotten the couple out of the fight or they haven't gotten out of the conflict. So when they go to mediation, they're fighting in the mediation. Well, what we want to do is get the emotionality resolved, and I might work with the couple if they're going to get a divorce to get the emotionality resolved and get the forgiveness going, so that then Jerry will mediate with them, and rather quickly she can get them in a divorce settlement that works for the couple, it works for the kids. And then we also, believe it or not, we have an attorney in our office, and he'll file the legal documents, and a couple can be divorced in rather 5 weeks. And that's a lot different than what we've seen when they start getting hooked up with the attorneys and there's a lot of animosity. I mean, they go from an unhappy marriage to actually a miserable divorce, and everybody pays for it. So when you come to our office, it's sort of a full-service office. We can help with the kids. We can help with the marriage couples. If one of them wants a divorce or they've resolved that they want a divorce, we can get them into mediation and get them through the divorce. And then I think another unique thing about us is Jerry being a certified sex therapist is helpful, because so often people do want to talk about their sexual relationship and they want to talk about their sexuality. And this is a place, I always tell people, this is a place where you can come and talk to us, and we're not going to hold it against you. What you say in here, it's kind of sacred, and we're not going to use it against you. And if you come in next week and you've changed your mind and you've done a full 360-degree turn on what you're saying last week, it's perfectly okay. Because we need safe places, I think, for people to discover who they are as human beings. And I think we're in a business where we're helping people become human beings.
We're talking with Tim Evans, Jerry Carter, and is it the Hyde Park area around Tampa Bay? Is that what you said where you are?
Right, Peter. It's a small...
I've been there, but I don't remember.
Right, it's a small community. We are only minutes from downtown Tampa, maybe just a mile or two. And South Tampa is like a peninsula. At the end of the peninsula is MacDill Air Force Base, so we get quite a bit of getting to work with the enlisted men and
we're
women.
Let me interrupt a minute. We're going to go to a break in a minute with the music coming in. When we come back, maybe these deadly problems, you could go through them or some of them and tell people what you think of the things that get in the way. And I want to say how marvelous it is that you're doing innovative things. makes me feel like an old fogey sitting in my office to hear people at our conference talking about the innovative things they're doing and have you on the radio talking about them. And I think that's what we need. We need people to work in their comfort zones and in their creative zones to give the services that they feel comfortable, excited about, and interested in providing. We need that. We don't need this rigidified approach of talking in a very limited way, in the office, as we're taught, as clinical psychologists and social workers are often taught. We'll be going to break now and be back soon. And this is Dr. Peter Breggin, and I am back with Tim Evans, my good friend, and my good friend Jerry Carter, who were both did a really good workshop at our conference. And we're talking about approaches to helping families in distress. One of the things you mentioned that I sort of let slide by was you had an attorney in the office. Actually in the office, is there enough business for that, or they happen to be in the same building?
Well, Peter, it is amazing how helpful it is to have an attorney in our office, because there are so many mental health problems that are also tied with the legal system. And, for instance, we can't always mediate a divorce, but if somebody comes in and they say, oh, my goodness, my wife just filed for divorce, I don't know what to do, and you would say, would you like to talk to someone? Because once that happens, you can't, you can mediate, but you can't do the pre-litigation mediation that we do, that Tim described in the first half of the hour. So having Chris Alfonso as our attorney, having him here, he can do that. He can help people with dependency issues. He can help people with anything that's stressful that's happening to them. He worked in wealth management for the first part of his career. So I had one young lady who found out that she owed $10,000 in taxes because her ex-husband didn't file, the taxes. And so, I just sent her right into Chris because he can answer questions and put people at ease. And it's really been amazingly productive to have him here.
He's in our office. He's not in our building. He's actually here with us. So
that he's in the building.
No. He's in our office.
He's not
a lawyer in the building. He's
customers.
Actually in our office. So
yeah,
with our suites. So.
So do you give him enough business just from your practice?
Well, he has his own practice as well.
That's what I was wondering.
Right. He has business from the outside, just like we all have our own clients, Peter. Tim and I sometimes see clients together, but, I have my own book, he has his own book, but we're all kind of professionals. We all kind of work together.
I think it's a marvelous model, and one of the things I'm hoping that non-medical professionals will do more and more is be the leader in creating a clinic environment without necessarily calling it a clinic or getting it licensed, where you have different people working together. And increasingly, I hope that somewhere in the community there'll be some kind of psychiatrist or family doctor, pediatrician, who will also work with that clinic or that community of professionals in helping people come off psych drugs. But that, I think, is going to be the future. Psychiatry is never going to come around to taking seriously coming off psych drugs, I don't believe.
That's our biggest stumbling block with what we're doing is getting a physician that will help people come off the psychiatric drugs. And the thing I worry about is as many times as we tell them to go slow, to not do this on your own, make sure you do this under medical supervision, they come in here because they can't find anybody, and they're doing it on their own without medical supervision. And, of course, we really got to put our foot down, but they can't find anybody because when they go to some of the doctor's office, they're telling them they should increase it, not decrease the medication. And we really are looking. We really wish we could find somebody who would work with us. And believe me, we search and we keep the word out to try to find somebody who will work with us to get people off the medication. It's very dangerous when the clients can't find anybody and they get frustrated and they come in, they start telling us, I'm doing it on my own. You're going, no, you got to stop. You can't be doing that on your own.
Yeah, it's a terrific problem. Well, talk some nuts and bolts about the kinds of issues you see in marriage and family therapy that are really important.
I'll start a little bit, Jerry, then you just come in, pipe in, okay? We're
Absolutely.
In different rooms, so we can't see each other.
Absolutely.
First of all, Peter, for the marital or couples therapy to be successful, you've got to get a couple of attitudes going. And everybody that comes into our office in a relationship, you know, they come in prepared to talk about what the other person is doing wrong. And they generally have an attitude that I'm going to give you, and it's usually 90% accurate, I'm going to give you my objective observation about my partner. And if only my partner would change, then I would be happy. And your guy's job is to change my partner so I could be happy. And so we sort of start off with a disadvantage, and we have to get that whole line of thought reworked without losing people and them getting upset. If we don't get across to the couple that the only person they can change is themselves, and that they have to take responsibility for themselves, if we fail in getting that attitude and spirit across, then the therapy is not going to go very well. And we've got about 5 sessions to get them out of the, get them to stop fighting, because nothing's going to change until they stop fighting. And we've got about 5 sessions to get them out of what we call external control, external psychology. And if we can't do it in 5 sessions, usually it's going to be challenging to make any changes. So we tell people that we're going to supply them with the information, but they've got to supply the goodwill towards each other in order to make this work. And then the first thing we're going to do is, and I think this is where all the problems exist, is people trying to control someone else. You know, with good friendships, the psychology in a good friendship is not one where you're attempting to control your good friend, because your good friend will walk away. And marriages, we would like them to be based on friendships, but something strange happens when people get married. Somewhere along the line, they think in terms of obligation and ownership, and they somehow get the idea or the notion that because I know what's best, I have the right to tell you what to do. And that is the beginning of the end. So we will ask couples, we want to work on the strengths and what they like about each other and make sure they stay connected, but we'll usually ask people, do you ever try to control your partner? Usually they'll say no, even though they're doing it, but sometimes they'll say yes, and then we'll say, well, have you succeeded at it? Have you succeeded at controlling anyone very long? And they'll say no. Only if you keep up the pressure can you control somebody, and even then, they're going to start misbehaving. So we'll have a conversation about how to get out of the fight, and they need to get out of the fight. We'll have a little conversation about external control, and then we'll usually talk to them about the deadly habits. The deadly habits are, they tend to be blaming, complaining, nagging, withdrawing, rewarding. And then Jerry and I add a few more, which are like unbridled emotional expression. Criticism is extremely dangerous. And the other thing we'll notice is bringing up the past, which they do in your office. And we really got to get, we have to educate them and realize that when they do those deadly habits, they're disconnecting from their partner. I think we all have an innate and tuned thing in our brain that tells us we're disconnecting. And we'll tell them that to make the marriage work, they got to give up on being right, and they have to make the relationship the priority. And whatever they say or do, they have to be thinking, does it move us closer or further apart? Whatever I say or do, is it a connection or a disconnection? The problem people have with all that is they're so caught up in being right. Like, I've observed my partner drinking too much, and I am right, and therefore I'm going to change them. They don't understand that even though their observation is correct, the psychology they're using is wrong. So we usually have about up to 5 sessions to get people out of these external control, out of the deadly habits. And if we succeed in that, then we can start working on the encouragement, the daily dialogue, the problem solving, the compatibility, and the negotiating. But those deadly habits are the hardest. A couple of them, one of them that I see often, and I'll let Jerry get in here, is the bringing up the past. That is so hard for some people. Every discussion, because really bringing up the past is about who's right and who's wrong. And we believe you can be right or you can be happily married. You can't be both. And everybody has their subjective view of things. And satisfying couples know that things are subjective and they give up on being right. But one thing you'll find, and there's two things that I really find destructive, is this idea of bringing up the past and arguing about the past. If you go out to dinner at night, and you're at a restaurant and you see a couple sitting across from each other and they're not talking, it's usually because they have a rule. And the rule is, whatever you say and do will and shall be used against you on a repeated basis. And because of that rule, they just stop interacting, they stop sharing their quality world. Jerry and I think the rule needs to be, whatever you say and do will and shall not ever be used against you, even in a kidding manner, because we're problem solvers. And we really want to move people from fighting to problem solving, because you have a choice. You can either fight or you can problem solve. But most people, they don't know what the problem solving looks like. I think the other deadly one besides bringing up the past is the criticism. And criticism is just a luxury we can't afford. When people are criticizing, the information they're giving is usually accurate. And we have found that the more intimate the relationship is, the more damaging the criticism is. And what's even more interesting is the more accurate the criticism is, the more it hurts the relationship. And usually you're not giving any new information to the person. They already know that about themselves. Often when we're trying to convince people to make an effort to give up the deadly habits, we'll tell them that they're probably not going to be any worse off if they quit doing the complaining, the nagging, the bringing up the past, and the criticism. I'm going to let Jerry, I'm going to let her add to this right now.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, doing marriage therapy is so easy, and I love it, absolutely love it, because all you have to do is listen very carefully. If you understand the psychology that Tim just described as a therapist, and I sit down, you know, you say, what brings you in? And they will start in. They will tell you. They will show you where they are disconnecting. Is it the use of criticism? Are they blaming? Are they bringing up the past? So I take copious notes the very first session with all of the stuff, all of the fodder that I can turn back on them a little later and go, now, this, explain the psychology, and then you say, so when you said this, what were you doing? And they get it right away. Oh, that's a criticism, exactly. Even though your motivation in using criticism is to get your partner to be different so that you could be happy, it always backfires. And, you know, people are so smart, Peter. They really understand it if you put it in simple terms. The harder thing is to change your behavior when they leave the office with one another. So when they come back in the next session, you know, we always say, so where did you catch yourself not being controlling of your partner or not trying to change your partner? And they start to get it rather quickly. It's really a beautiful thing.
And most people, like, they'll sort of laugh because I said, you know, if you just pay attention to yourself, you could see yourself starting to do the deadly habits. Like, we need to sit down and talk. Or, I know I shouldn't say this. Well, then don't say it. Or, I always like this one. I want to be honest with you. I'm going to tell you my honest feelings. Well, those honest feelings are usually disjunctive emotions. And under the disguise of honesty, we're criticizing somebody, because I've never had anybody come up to me and say, hey, Tim, I want to be honest with you. And I go, okay. And they go, you're very intelligent. You're a good-looking man. You can run very fast. I've never had anybody do that. It's all the things they don't like about me. So we really have an experience. I think it's informative. It's educational. Some people, though, and I think it's my skill level, it's not them, it's just very hard to convince them to not use external control on the partner, and they have so much trouble getting out of it because they think they're right. But once we can get them to stop using the deadly habits and out of external control, it's a lovely thing to watch because they start reconnecting, and then we go through their strengths, and we talk about the strengths of the relationship, and then we teach them how to encourage each other. The problem with this is if you're in a good fight with your partner, you don't aid and comfort the enemy. You just find out what's wrong with them and you go after them. And so you can't get them to encourage each other when they're fighting. But if they give up on these deadly habits, if they give up on external control, then they're much more likely to want to encourage the other person. And that's not praise, but that's conveying to the person how much they like them and they only want more of the same. Then you can do the encouraging aspect.
We've got about 8 minutes left or so. One of the things that I notice is that you're not using the language of love. And I noticed that with other therapists that I interview, and I talk about, as you guys know, I talk about love all the time. So when I approach these issues, I think everything you're saying is spot on, right on. And I do the same, very similar things. I mean, when people say they want to be honest, and they might say, isn't this the one place I get to be honest? And I'll do this in both psychotherapy and individual therapy, where the person looks at me and wants to be honest. I say, no. This is the place where we learn to communicate in a loving manner.
Yeah, I agree.
And I
talk about love a lot. I'll set up the situation in the very first session that I'll say, do you guys love each other? They may be unsure. I'll say, did you once love each other? Well, of course. And I have them actually talk about that in the first session, how they once loved each other. And then I will say, well, my goal is to help you make loving communications with each other and to build up your love. And everything else is the garbage we'll be looking at. But what my goal is, and I want to see if you want to join me in that, and people always do, is I want to help you have a loving relationship because that's the center of happiness in life. Now, do you guys talk about love directly?
I talk about love a lot, actually, and we're doing the same thing, Peter. We have a little bit of a different language, but I talk to them about, you know, can you please tell me what you like about your partner? Can you tell me, you know, love, like, admire? Always in the first session and towards the very end, because remember that first session, generally they think that they're going to come in and tell me about all their partner's ills. And that's when we present psychology. But I'm also always in the first session with, tell me what you like about your partner. Tell me what you love about them, admire. And that's when you see, just like what you're saying, Peter, that's when you see a change. Because many times they'll get a tear in their eye when they start speaking about what they love about their partner. Because I really believe when people come into therapy, you know, together, they're there because they want it to be different. They, you know, they're looking for the love again. Where did the love go? And so we get that going in the first session. And really good marital therapy, of course, is to keep that going and to teach connection and how to stay in that place. I think I was lucky enough to spend time with you and Ginger, and I notice how you guys connect. I remember Ginger coming in and sharing an email or something about how you had really helped someone, and she just said, you know, Peter, I just wanted you to see what a big difference you're making. And I just thought that was so sweet. And that, you know, but couples stop doing that when the relationship starts to take a dive, and you've got to recreate that.
And I think due to your influence, Peter, I think I've been using the word love a little bit more. We'll have somebody and we'll ask them maybe to stop criticizing their partner, and they'll go, well, they're going to criticize me. And I go, in spite of what your partner's doing, I'm asking you, would you consider it? And then I say, you have a choice. You have the idea that you can be a loving, generous, kind person, or you can be an angry, bitter person in spite of your clients. So I've noticed maybe it's the influence of being around you. I've been talking to people a little bit more about being a loving, generous person. I think maybe I used to use the word encouragement, but I am putting the word love there. And I think the other thing we do is, Jerry and I, with our couples, we really try to get people to be continue. Romance should last your entire life, and your creativity should last your entire life. And a lot of the couples coming in here, they've stopped having fun, they stopped being romantic, they stopped being creative. It's a little bit helpful when I'm working with some of the men, because I'll say, okay, so what have you done fun in the last month? And the majority of them will say, well, the fun thing I did, and it's a typical answer, is dinner and a movie. And I'm not opposed to dinner and the movie, but that's the only thing they're doing. And a movie could be fine, but there's not much interaction. And trying them to pick them up to be creative, to be romantic, you could ask them, when was the last time you wrote a love letter to your wife or wrote her poems? And they'll say, 20 years ago in college. I go, oh, my God. Some people have never done it, you know? And I'll have a musician, and he's got a band, and he's struggling with his wife. And I'll go, how about at the next concert, you go out and sing her a love song? I go, you won't have to come back here ever again. because there's all kinds of things we can do that's creative and loving and romance. I think you have that in one of your books about you could be romantic. I don't know how you put it, for your whole life. It's like some people that get married, once they're married, it's over. And I'm like, boy, you're missing out on the best part. There's tons of things to do that are fun and romantic and just going for a walk.
You made me think of something I haven't thought of in 20 years or more. The first year or two that Ginger and I were together, I happened to go out to my car, and I bumped into a couple of men who were kind of dressed in some sort of uniform, and we got chatting, and it turned out they sang together in barber shop with some other men. I can't remember how many were there. And I asked them if they'd wait a minute and sing a love song to my wife if I call her back. So I went in and I brought Ginger out, and they did. They sang her a love song. Now, I think it took Ginger a while to recover from it because she wasn't used to that. But when this show is over, I'm going to go and ask her if that turned out to be a good thing or an embarrassing thing. But I've always been very romantic in that regard. And, you know, as a person who does so much in the universe like I do, just a huge amount out in the universe, I can tell you that the successes, they don't mean anywhere near as much as coming home to a loving relationship. And the failures are so much, much, much less.
Yeah.
Coming home to a... In fact, things that would have just torn my heart out may not hurt for more than a few minutes, because I can get back in touch with love and with loving Ginger. I think it's the heart of it all. We've got about a minute and a half left. I'm talking with Tim Evans and Jerry Carter, friends, colleagues, in New Hyde Park in Tampa, near Tampa. Would you like to give a phone number? Please feel free to do that, or an email or anything else. Or
just go to our website, and this material is free. You can just download the Deadly Habits and articles and stuff like Stop All Grousing right off our website. It's www.carterandevans, and the and is spelled out. So it's carterandevans.com. And you can get our email and our phone numbers right off our website.
That's great. I think it's so important, the way you began talking today, about the importance of marriage and relationship. You go nowadays to your average clinician and to any psychiatrist just about, and they'll treat you like your problem is your own. And, of course, most men at least want to think that, you know, my problem is my own, I'm going to solve it. And while many women understand that problems are relational, they don't have the hope of dealing with it as relational. And my view is that whatever the cause of problems, and I think I'm sure you believe this, whatever the causes of problems in the relationship in the past, and indeed whatever struggles the individuals are having individually at work, or other in their own extended families and so on, that the heart of healing and the heart of catastrophe, both for most of us, are in relationships and usually in the marriage and the family. So good work. I hear the music coming on. So I'm going to say goodbye to my dear friend Bye. Tim and Jerry. We'll be in touch. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned to my website, Bregan.com, for where there will be upcoming conferences.